Hey, ik snap dat je je podcast wil luisteren, dus ik zal het kort houden. Want als jij het belangrijk vindt om duurzame keuzes te maken, kan ASR misschien helpen. Nou hoor ik je denken, hoe dan? Nou, bijvoorbeeld bij het duurzaam herstellen van schade. Of de premies die we beleggen volgens ons duurzaam beleggingsbeleid. Dat bepaalt waar we wel en juist niet in investeren. Wil je meer weten over welke duurzame keuzes ASR maakt? Ga dan naar asr.nl/duurzamekeuzes. ASR doet het. Zo. Dan kan je nu lekker naar je podcast luisteren. Hey, ik snap dat je je podcast wil luisteren, dus ik zal het kort houden. Want als jij het belangrijk vindt om duurzame keuzes te maken, kan ASR misschien helpen. Nou hoor ik je denken, hoe dan? Nou, bijvoorbeeld bij het duurzaam herstellen van schade. Of de premies die we beleggen volgens ons duurzaam beleggingsbeleid. Dat bepaalt waar we wel en juist niet in investeren. Wil je meer weten over welke duurzame keuzes ASR maakt? Ga dan naar asr.nl/duurzamekeuzes. ASR doet het. Zo, dan kan je nu lekker naar je podcast luisteren.
I was sitting having a drink while I was doing the interview for Men's Health. Like, what a joke. I would lay in bed some nights and I would feel like I stopped breathing.
Okay.
I was half asleep, half awake, half passed out because I was drunk. And I'm in great shape. And so I would tell myself, and I believed myself, that I'm different.
Vandaag in de podcast Dan Carity. Dit multitalent werkt als choreograaf voor sterren als Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake. En je kent hem ook vast als jurylid van Holland Got Talent. Maar ondertussen worstelde de danser jarenlang met zijn alcoholverslaving. En vandaag praten we erover. Hier is Dan Carity.
Welcome Dan, good
thank
that you're
you.
Here.
Yeah, great to
en
be
tegenover me zit Najib Amali, mijn vriend, mijn partner, mijn compagnon, mijn stankom, mijn mattie. Zo zeg jij dat toch altijd?
It's me.
Oké, dank. Hey, welkom Najib, fijn dat jij er ook bent.
Dankjewel man. Misschien dat je even moet zeggen dat we deze show in het Engels gaan doen. Maar
ja, we gaan deze show dus in het Engels doen. En in het Engels is het what?
What else can happen?
What else can happen? Wat kan er nou gebeuren?
Nou, misschien gaan we straks internationaal naar deze podcast.
You never know, man.
Dus welcome. Good that you're here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, to talk with us about your journey in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Can you start with when did this started for you to come in recovery and what happened before that?
Yeah, what happened before that, you know, I started drinking at about 14 years old when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was a blackout drinker from day one, the first time I drank, it was to blackout. And that never changed. And partied through high school, college. And it always continued, you know, I had the lifestyle work wise, as a dancer and a choreographer, you know, I would work for a few days and I had multiple days off and, you know, and so whenever I was off, I was drinking, I was partying. And that always continued. And I always told myself that it was young and I was just being young and having fun and there was nothing wrong with it because I wasn't questioning what I was doing because my career kept growing. I kept doing better and getting better jobs and making more money and, you know, and went from a dancer to a choreographer to a television judge. All this stuff was happening. So like the entitlement took over. Right. And, and no one could tell me that there was a problem with it. No one did tell me there was a problem with it because everything else around me looked okay.
Yeah.
I tried to quit multiple times.
When was the first time that you thought like, whoa, maybe this is getting a problem?
Yeah, when I was probably about 30 or so, I tried to quit and I lasted for, you know, a few months.
Yeah.
And it was a struggle. But you know, I told myself, see, I didn't drink for 3 months. I'm not an alcoholic, you know? And so started drinking again, but you know, day one, you start drinking again and I was right back to where I was drinking just as much. There was no easing my way back in. No. The longest I ever quit for was for like a 7 month period where I ended up running the New York City Marathon.
Oh, wow.
All I did was trade addictions. Yeah. I stopped drinking and I started running.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the marathon ended. I stopped running and I started drinking a couple weeks later again.
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, I was drinking a blackout again. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
But I told myself when I would get married, I would quit. Okay, when I have kids, I will quit. Yeah. Okay, when my kids get a little older, I'll quit. You know, and never happened. And then when the pandemic hit and all these things I had sort of put around me to control myself enough, the work, the travel schedule, everything that kept me just enough in check. Yeah. When all that was taken away, I went off the cliff, you know? So when I was just home 24/7, like everybody else during the pandemic, I started drinking 24/7.
Wow.
And completely lost control. Yeah. Until, I mean, I knew I still didn't, I admitted to myself that I was an alcoholic, but I had myself convinced that I was different.
Yeah. Oh, that's what we do. Eh?
I'll figure this.
Like to be different.
I'll figure this out. So, you know, I'll be okay.
We have money.
I still go to the gym every morning.
Yeah.
What alcoholic goes to the gym at 6 a.m.? I'm different, you know?
I will tackle this alone.
Yeah.
I don't need no help.
No, I'll figure it out. You know.
And I think that's the hard part for people who are successful. You know, here you can, you built your life and your career is going really like up. And at the other side, you know, you're starting to lose grip on your life because you're drinking alcohol. So the powerlessness kicks in over there. Yeah. And that's really hard to accept help if you know you can build things up.
Yeah.
You know, and why can I not stop drinking alone? Because at the left side, I put everything up.
Yeah,
and that's really hard because I recognize myself in that, but if it comes to alcohol, drugs, or addiction, I'm a retard.
Yeah,
I'm really a retard, and I can convince myself really some really crazy shit, and that I started to believe that, and from there off, yeah, it's really hard to be then open minded and to accept help.
Yeah, I refused, you know, and my wife, she tried on so many occasions.
Yeah.
To get me to just talk to someone, get some help, you know, go to a meeting, do something, you know, but I would manipulate, you know, so badly, so unfairly, and just look at her like she had three heads, you know, are you crazy? Look, look what we have.
Yeah. Look
at my job and look at the house and, you know, but even to myself, I would say, look at everything that I'm doing and I have this incredible wife and I have these two wonderful kids and look what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, how dare you question me?
There's not a problem.
No, there couldn't be.
No,
you know?
It looks like really like your story.
I got the same. My wife also said to me, just talk to, she called a psychologist. She called him and I was there. I said, yeah, sometimes, you know, when? Yeah, I think two times, three times in the week. My wife is very, he knows it, you know. I was there before I go to him. I use some cocaine. I said, no, man, I don't have a problem. And then I didn't come. She said to this guy, listen, just come to his house at 9 o'clock, you know. And then I was wake up and she said, he's coming. So who's coming? He's coming to you. I said, why? Well, you don't. You have to go to him. He's coming to you. So, I don't want him here. So,
and keep then, him out.
Oh, keep him out. So then, what I would
paranoia.
I put my pants on because I don't want to see him. You know. Yeah. Then I get in my car and I just drive 3-4 kilometers and I park my car at the park station. And then she called me and I put my phone out. So just for an hour. Then this guy don't gonna wait for an hour. Is he here? No. All right, I'm gone. And then she called the police.
Oh, shit.
My husband is missing.
Wow.
Oh, man. Oh, it was terrible. Man. So, yeah. But
the thing with like psychiatrists or even therapists or whatever, it's still, they can only help you so much.
Yeah.
Because they can only go off what you tell them.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And they, unless they're an addict themselves.
Yeah.
They can't call you out on your nonsense. No. Like when you go into an AA meeting or something, those guys will call you out.
Yeah.
You know, like I realized right away when I was in rehab, you know, like I can't lie to these guys.
No.
They'll see right through me, you know, where a therapist, they don't know.
No.
You
no.
know, I'm only giving them this much information. Yeah.
You can't bullshit the bullshit.
No,
you can't bullshit
the bullshit. That's it, right?
Because I had another one and she do it with a Skype meeting and he was a Skype thing and I was talking to her. I said, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Wait a minute. Yeah. Yeah, now I think some 2 weeks I'm clean.
Really?
Yes, really. So, you know.
It's true.
It's yeah. So. Yeah. I run a lot. So, you know, when she has. Also, she said, just call, you know, call them for intake.
Yeah.
I did a fake call. Really? She was here. Say, yes. 2 weeks. All right. Thank you so much.
But there was no one on the phone.
There was no one on the phone. She said, and I said, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Yeah. So 2 weeks. Yeah. So now I can drink yeah. and do, but 2 weeks, then I'm there.
It's going to be the best 2 weeks of my life.
Right? How many, how much you can but lie to yourself.
And that's it, right? The lying.
I was tired.
I lied about everything.
Everything.
And as I was lying, I didn't even know why.
Yeah, you ask yourself, what the fuck am I lying about this? Yeah.
But it was about everything.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even about drinking at that point.
No.
Every aspect of my life was a lie.
Yeah.
Always bigger or better or worser.
Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah. That's a strange phenomenon for Alex, that lying. And how was that for you to come in recovery and... to go through all these lies and started to get honest with yourself, because I had a hard time with it.
So
I didn't know how to do that. I was afraid to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was at first.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you in the US you do 31 days in rehab, right? Okay. That's what insurance pays for.
Okay.
And then unless you're a disaster, they're going to move you out.
Is it a standard thing?
It's a standard thing. Yeah. 31 days.
And you, but you have to have insurance.
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't have insurance,
you can pay for it yourself, but it's like $20,000 a week or something like that.
$20,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of
a week. So,
a week.
Yeah.
So I had insurance. Thank God.
Okay. Yeah.
But those were the best 31 days I had lived in years.
Yeah.
Because by the second day or so, I started to get honest.
Yeah.
With these people, because they were being so honest with me.
Yeah.
I was like, well, who cares? You know, I can open up here.
Yeah.
And it was like this.
All this burden.
World was opening up to me because I could actually speak my mind and say how I feel and what I'm thinking and what I'm going through. And to be honest, for the first time after all those years was just spectacular.
And for our listeners and for our viewers, we talk about honesty, but it started to get honest about your feelings.
Yeah.
About your insecurities.
Yep.
Low self-worth or whatever.
Yeah.
Feelings.
About who I was.
Yeah.
About admitting
that
I was completely lost.
Mm-hmm.
That I was being crap to myself, to my wife, to my kids, to everything.
Yeah.
You know, and saying it out loud. You know, and admitting the powerlessness, to admit that and to say my every thought in every moment of the day is about drinking.
No
matter where I am or what I'm doing, that's what I'm thinking about while I'm drinking, before I'm drinking, after I'm drinking, I'm thinking about drinking, you know, and being able to say that out loud and tell it to people and have them look at me like, we know that felt so good.
And what kind of person you was if you're drinking? You get calm or you get hype or?
No, I got calm. I did most of my drinking on my own.
Oh, yeah.
I was a homebody.
Yeah.
I like to drink at home by myself.
Yeah.
You know, I would always convince my wife, oh, have a glass of wine, you know? And she would take like 3 sips of her wine.
Yeah.
And then I would drink however many bottles were left.
The bottles,
So I like to do it at home. So I was very relaxed and chill. Yeah. And, you know, I never got crazy or really agitated or anything like that. But I would just drink until I passed out.
Okay.
You know, I would drink to get numb. And the good feeling would last for, I don't know.
What's
maybe
numb?
An hour.
Numb. Verdoofed.
Oh, numb. I verdoofed. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that was it. Like there wasn't. I could drink. I was more in my later years of my alcoholism. I was a wine drinker.
Okay.
But I wasn't drinking for like good, nice red wine.
No.
I was downing that wine.
Yeah.
And it was literally just to get to the point of not feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it was about.
Alcoholic.
Yeah.
That's why I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. And that's what you mean also with, when you started to drink, you didn't drink because you liked it. You drank for the effect of it.
100%.
And can you tell us something about your feelings before you started to drink?
God,
how did you deal with feelings? Because you started when you were 14 years, eh?
Yeah. You know, it's strange to me. When I look back to when I started, like when I was a teenager,
yeah,
I think I was just drinking just to be cool and to party with my friends.
We part off.
Now, I had older brothers. I had older brothers and sisters, but my older brothers were partiers, right? And so I kind of watched them, and I thought, this is what they do for fun, so it's what I'm going to do for fun. Yeah. But somewhere along the way, in like my college years, I became very uncomfortable when I would go to a party, or even when I was in high school, I used to go to clubs in New York City and I would dance. I'd be the guy, you know, I was a dancer. I'd be the guy in the circle dancing, showing, and it's how I would pick up girls was by dancing. I did not have, you know, the gift of talking. I would dance, and that was my way in, you know? And somewhere in the middle of my college years, I didn't have the balls to go in the circle and do that anymore. I needed drinks. I started drinking, and then I would go into the circle. By the time I was 23 or 24, I wasn't even going in the circle anymore. I was just at the corner of the bar drinking, and always in the corner of the room. I didn't want to be in the middle of anything anymore. So I went from loving being the center of attention in high school to removing myself from that. And then the more I drank, like anybody, you know, your anxiety level goes up. And so I got to the point where I would drink so much at night that when I would wake up in the morning, the anxiety was already at a higher level. And then it was just the countdown to how long do I have to wait until I can drink again. And for years, I was able to push that off until 5-6 o'clock at night, you know. But as I got older, I got into my 30s, then I started drinking at noon, you know, and I would find anybody I could to go to lunch with me, you know, so I can have a couple drinks at lunch, you know, and I just started earlier and earlier because that feeling of anxiety was so overwhelming. I wanted that drink as early as I could get it. Now, a smart man would have said to himself, you idiot, it's how much you're drinking at night is what's making that happen every day.
The next day.
But I didn't see it that way.
I saw
the drinking as the medicine for that. That's what was helping me, you know? And so I just kept pushing it earlier and drinking more and just kind of fed the beast. And I remember a few moments of clarity and honesty. And I remember walking to my wife, and she was in the guest room because she didn't want to sleep in the same room with me that night before. And I walked in to the room and I told her that I loved the kids so much and I loved her so much, but God, I hated myself. And I remember her just looking at me like, what are you talking about? But it was this sober moment. And I was just finally saying something out loud, you know, and that goes back to what you're saying. It's like, I would wake up and start to actually feel something. And God, I couldn't live with it. Because I started to blur the line somewhere along the way. I started to blur the line of who I really was and who this character was that I played on television and in public. And it started with me, the guy I was on TV. I started playing that same guy when I would hang out with my friends. And then I started playing that same guy when I would hang out with my family. Then I brought it home to my wife and kids. And I realized I had no idea who I was as a husband, as a father, any of those things. I was just that guy. You know? And so I was lost.
That struck me when you said, you know, I started to hate myself. You know, I just couldn't look myself in the picture. I had times, and I find it really hard to tell this. I never told this to our viewers and our listeners. You know, I used to hit myself in the face. Because I hated myself. Just because I couldn't stop. I really hated myself for what I did yesterday. I hated myself for what I forgot about yesterday. I hated myself what people would tell me the next day what I was doing. Just, you know, putting myself up for like really a fool. And that's a hard way to live with yourself, you know, because I couldn't stop, but I couldn't also live with it.
I think part of me in the selfishness of the disease was saying, I'm not hurting anybody. Like if I'm hurting anyone, I'm hurting myself. But I would think, I didn't realize how absent I was from my wife all those years, you know,
emotionally
just completely unavailable to her. Yeah. But when she would talk to me about it, I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, like we hang out all the time and look at our house, look at our life, you know, and like, meanwhile we had zero intimacy. And what I mean by that is like actually connecting in a conversation. We never did that because I didn't offer that up. And when she would try it, I would give her some bullshit surface conversation, and that would be the end of it, you know.
We talked a lot about intimacy, and what I learned in recovery is the highest form of intimacy is honesty. Because we weren't honest. How can we get intimate? If I really would be intimate with a woman when I was clean, I would say, I'm really scared. I don't know how to handle this. That's intimate.
Absolutely.
My ego would let me do that.
No way.
You know, no way. I wouldn't tell that.
Yeah.
I'd rather take some drugs or alcohol to put myself over it.
Yep.
But at the end, you know, it's really hard. I talk with Najib also a lot of becoming that person and look your children just in the eyes. And you know, that was a part for me that my daughter told me, Daddy, I really love you, but I don't want to see you anymore because you're just hurting me.
Oh.
You know, that was 4 years ago. And I think that was really the moment that... also what you said about the pictures, maybe when I saw some pictures of myself, I wouldn't start to think. That was really a period that I started to think about, like, whoa, man.
Yeah.
You know, my own daughter is telling me this.
Is that what, like, pushed you to go to get help again?
It was one of these things that pushed me, yeah.
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 I know for me, my kids were that push that made me say, I'm not going to do this to them. My wife could not get me to go.
No.
I wouldn't do it for anyone. I wouldn't even do it for myself at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my kids, the thought of what I was going to put them through, I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. And what that has changed with my kids is it's insane. You know, I was that guy on Instagram that lied about everything.
Yeah.
I made my life look perfect.
Yeah.
And I took my kids everywhere, right? I took my son fishing. I took my kids to the Yankee game.
Yeah.
I took my kids to school every day, and I made sure I got a picture and I posted it so that everybody saw me being super dad, right? What I didn't show you is that I took my son fishing and I set him up, and then I went to the end of the dock and drank two beers and sat there by myself on my phone or something and barely talked to him.
Yeah.
And now... whatever I do with my kids, if we're just sitting on our driveway or I'm fishing or at the eight, I'm in it with them, having these conversations, learning about what they're thinking and telling them what I know and connecting on this level that now I'm being the dad that I always thought I was going to be and the dad that I was trying to show everybody that I was.
Yeah.
Now I'm actually that guy, and it feels
great.
Fantastic. Yeah. So I didn't, you know, to answer your question about, did I feel that anxious feeling of like when I got sober and stuff like that? I didn't. It was kind of all of that left me.
Yeah.
The only anxiety I still feel now is really about making sure I'm being as honest as I can be with my wife. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, 'cause now I didn't want her to know for the longest time what was really going on in my head, you know? Now I'm like, God, if I tell her that, she's going to think I'm nuts. She's not going to understand the mind of the addict, you know?
Yeah.
So I have to remind myself that she's at least open and understanding and she wants to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, she stuck around, you know, which is a blessing that she stuck around and waited for me.
Yeah.
To find this place. So I have to be as open with her as I possibly can be.
Yeah.
Because she deserves that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how long these people stay with us.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
I wouldn't have.
No. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So, but that part of children is very important for us. I always get a little bit emotional if it comes to children because I wanted to stop for a long time for my daughter, but I just couldn't. You know, I say... the love for my daughter and for my mother is big enough to stop, but not strong enough to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also have times that you thought like, I cannot do this?
Since I've been sober?
No, or when you wanted to try to stop.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I tried everything that an alcoholic tries, yeah. Right? All the changes, all the yeah. different routines, all the I'm going to drink this and not that, that. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
I'll only drink on these days. Yeah. You know, I tried everything
yeah.
and none of it. Yeah. You know, my brother was in rehab 8 years ago. And I remember when he got out, he said to me, and this is how long I was aware that I had a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 8 years ago, he got out of rehab and he said, because he knew, he and I drank together all the time.
Yeah.
He knew I had a problem.
Yeah.
You know?
He saw the symptoms.
Oh, of course. Yeah. You know, he saw me drink with him, you know? So he said, try to go 21 days without drinking. No. Okay. I'll go 21 days. I couldn't go 3. Okay. You know, I couldn't do it. And I tried multiple times. And then my wife called me out and she said, you told your brother you were going to do the 21 days.
Yeah.
I said, oh, who cares? He doesn't, you know, don't he's you not going to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not going to know. Well, yeah, but I know.
Yeah.
I should have realized then, you know, I couldn't go 3 days. And it's just an example of all the different things I mm-hmm. tried, you know? And like I said before, like when I ran the marathon,
yeah.
You know, gave up drinking and it was just trading addictions because I wasn't solving any of my issues.
No.
You know, it was just, I just started running and ran incessantly
yeah.
every day, you know, and but I was still, you know, the dry drunk that they talk about. Drunk, I was a dry, yeah. I was miserable that I couldn't drink dry every drink. Night.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I mean, I tried everything and I realized I couldn't do it. And when I went down that ugly path during the pandemic,
yeah,
I went through that every morning. I would wake up and say, all right, today's the day. I'm going to stop today. I have to. And within like an hour, I was taking a drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I would go through my whole day. Okay, this will be my last one. This will be my yeah. last one. I was drinking all day. And
weren't you scared? Because you told us you drink and then you drop. Weren't you scared that you never going to wake up?
Yeah. During the pandemic, I started having panic attacks, anxiety okay. attacks.
Yeah.
I mean, my heart was thumping out of my chest during yeah. the day until I could get a drink down, okay. you know? Yeah. And, I mean, I laid on my bedroom floor a few days trying to hide from my kids and my wife
yeah.
just sitting saying, you gotta go get some help. You gotta yeah. do something, you know? And same thing. I mean, I can be so freaking manipulative, you know? Yeah. And I would yeah. convince her why it was going
to
be okay yeah.
to drink,
you
again.
Know? And people yeah. might think, why would she believe you? Oh yeah. man, I was so good.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, I was yeah. so good at making her
yeah.
believe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I was, and I, towards the very end, I would lay in bed some nights and I would feel like I stopped breathing.
Okay.
I was half asleep, half awake, half passed out because I was drunk. But I wouldn't take a breath for
yeah.
5-10 seconds at a time. Yeah. And yeah. I'd sit up, you know, and I would do this all night yeah. long.
Yeah. It's a hell.
And then what would I do? I would, yeah. by 7 a.m., I was yeah. pouring myself a drink because yeah. I knew that would make me feel better.
Yeah.
I mean, the sickness, it's you know,
sickness, really,
thinking
yeah.
I need this and then I'll feel better.
Yeah.
yeah.
Not thinking this is what's doing that to
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I could not shut it off.
Yeah.
Could not shut it off.
Did you believe that it was a disease before you got sober?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew, but I
didn't accept.
I was different.
Yeah.
I was different. You know, I was on the cover of Men's Health
yeah.
in the Netherlands. And I remember I did the interview for the magazine over the phone.
Yeah.
I was sitting having a drink while I was doing the interview
yeah.
for Men's Health.
Yeah.
Like, what a joke.
Yeah.
You know, but I had myself convinced that because I get up every morning at 6 a.m. and I'm at the gym and yeah. I'm working out, whatever, yeah. I don't have a problem.
No, but
it's
the body
okay
was
if
there.
I drink
yeah.
all night.
Yeah.
I'm ripped and I'm in great shape. And,
yeah.
and so mm-hmm. I would tell myself and I believed myself that I'm different.
Yeah.
I knew I had a drinking problem because I knew I would think about drinking all day long
yeah. Yeah.
and I drank as much as I could and yeah. I drank all night long,
yeah.
whatever. But if I could get up in the morning and keep this going and I look
yeah.
the way I look,
yeah.
and there's
and
not that much of an
really
issue.
Delusional.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's really crazy.
But I believed it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. But because if I would put you on the lie detector, I would see that you're really speaking the truth to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to do it tonight. It's the last time in the same a few hours you do it.
Yeah.
But if I put you at a lie detector and I would ask you, Dan, are you really done with it? I would see that you're really telling the truth.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing about this disease, that we really believe that we can do it on our own. Yeah. But if we look at our past, there was no one time we could do it alone.
Yeah.
What was your icon that you thought like, oh, wow, no, man, I really have to stop this? Your worst moment in drinking that you thought, no, I can't live like this anymore? Because I think every alcoholic or an addict has an icon.
I mean, oh God, man.
Just that when you think about it, you guys.
Yeah, there's so many.
Yeah.
I mean, my moment that sent me over the edge and finally made me say, and made me walk into that same guest room that my wife slept in again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And made me say, I need help. Was my daughter was 9 at mm-hmm. that time, and she came into the room in the morning and looked at me, and my daughter always looked at me in this like hero kind of way. Yeah. And for the first time she looked at me and she stopped before she even got to me, and she kind of tilted her head a little bit and just looked at me and said, Daddy, you don't look so good, and you're acting weird.
Yeah.
You know, and the look in her eyes of genuine concern for me, it's like just, I crumbled inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because despite missing every mark, right? Despite saying, okay, when I get married, okay, when I have kids, mm-hmm. okay, when my kid, now my kid could see it.
Yeah.
She could see it. And I promised myself that would never happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was after, I mean, I had been drinking for days. Nonstop.
Yeah.
You know, so I looked like hell. I felt like hell.
Yeah.
And she caught it. Yeah. You know, I would like to say that there was one night or something that was worse than the others, but there wasn't. No. There were a million nights that were horrible.
And did you step? Did you stop right after that? Or no?
God, no. 2 days later was when I was in rehab.
Yeah. Okay.
It took 2 days.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
But you know, like the last day when I was home, the last full day I was home, when I had agreed with my wife, I said, I'll go, and she was going to find me a place and whatever. She just said, if you can please just, you know, not drink and be here with us before you leave. And I said to her, I will. I promise. Yeah. You know, and I meant it when I said it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And about 30 minutes later, I pulled up in front of the liquor store and bought a bottle and started drinking.
Yeah.
And I know you guys get this, like, I meant it when I said it.
Yeah.
I really genuinely said, I'm going to stay sober for you guys today.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. That's and the night before I left, I passed out on the foot of our bed.
Wow.
You know,
if that's a good, example of powerlessness.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with willpower.
Yeah.
This is where our disease brings us.
And I never understood that. Right. Like before I went to rehab, I had the willpower to do anything. Uh-huh. It was back to what we were talking about before. Yeah. Look at everything else I'm doing.
Yeah.
Surely I can handle this.
Yeah.
And I did not believe it. And even my first day or two in rehab, I didn't believe it, you know, until I started to realize giving up, you know, surrendering to it. And I started to realize the power in that, the power in surrender.
Yes.
You know, I never bought into it before, but it started to make perfect sense for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you also scared about people going to recognize you in the rehab?
You know, luckily for me, because I haven't been on So You Think You Can Dance in the US for quite a few years and stuff, I'm not, you don't know me just walking down the street. Okay. So people in the dance community still know who I am, whatever, but not just on the street.
Okay.
So nobody knew me when I walked in there. And I kept to myself what I do for a living or whatever. After a couple of weeks and I started talking to people more, started to tell them my past, and they knew that I was a dancer. And then it started to become a little bit of a thing, and we would dance together in the hallways a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but all in good fun.
Okay.
So I didn't run into, oh crap, they're going to know who I am anything like that. I didn't. It didn't change how humiliating going into rehab though is. I don't know if it's the same here. You guys can tell me.
What?
But going in there and having to strip naked.
Wow.
And being searched, and I mean, I felt like I was going to prison.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, it was bad enough, yeah. like that I thought my life was over.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. It's like you go into rehab and it's, I knew I needed this.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to do this for my wife and I'm going to do this for my kids, whatever. But my life is over. Yeah. I'm never going to have fun again. I'm never, you know.
Yeah.
And then it was, okay, take off all your clothes. Yeah. Okay. And like, and they're searched me and I'm like, what is happening right now? Like, what did I agree to?
Yeah.
You know, it was the most humiliating, degrading experience, but I kept reminding myself, you brought yourself to this.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
I felt myself like a little kid, you know, they had to tell me what to do, when to do it,
how late,
how, what time I had to do
it. Clean your room.
And I had to shut, I had to shut down in groups like, listen, fuck man, I'm 45 years old.
Yeah, yeah,
they
took
out my perfume. I say, why? Yeah, there's alcohol in it. So I say, I don't going to drink my alcohol. Oh, I never know. Yeah. So I feel the ship, but it's alcohol. Yeah, people drink it. Yeah. How you mean? They do like, they do.
Yeah.
So now, you cannot have it.
Oh, yeah.
Or the how you call it, it's not medicine, but for my stomach, Rennie.
Yeah, Rennie.
They took it. Yeah. Say, why? Yeah, we will give it to you.
Yeah.
You know, have money. You have money. Yeah, give it to us.
Yeah,
yeah. You have to take everything. Take everything.
Take everything. But you know, they do it with a purpose.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and I have to surrender, like you said, I had to surrender to the program.
Yeah.
And I found it very hard to surrender. I had to surrender to the disease. I had to tell myself, like you did, like Najib did, like fuck, I lost. Mm-hmm. You know, I lost from this disease. I lost from addiction. But the moment you acknowledge your loss, you start to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the power of surrender is, what you just said.
Yeah.
It's really nice how you told that there is power in surrender. And lots of people think like if you surrender, the only thing what's being hurt in surrender is our own ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had a big ego. So,
So,
you know, they told me also, Reda, the only way that you're going to make is starting to be humble. And I really didn't know how to be humble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so insecure. I didn't know how to talk about feelings. So I had to tell them, I'm scared, man.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
I'm scared.
I don't know how to do this. Please help me.
There's an author, I don't know if you've heard of Ryan Holiday.
Ryan Holiday.
But he wrote, so I read his one book called Ego is the Enemy.
Yeah.
I read that maybe 2 or 3 years before I went to rehab, and I found myself, I was doing Belgium's Got Talent at the time.
Okay.
And I would be in the hotel by myself drinking, drinking wine, but reading the book and crying at certain points in the book. And I could not figure out why I was crying. Right. I was so lost, you know, that I mean, now it's obvious why I was crying, but I couldn't understand them, but it was all, you know, ego is the enemy. It talked about all the way your ego controls you and the way you need to not let it, you know?
Yeah.
And that book really hit home. And then when I got into rehab, I read it again.
Yeah.
It was the first book I read while I was in there and read a couple others. And then I read Ryan Holiday, another book of his called, The Obstacle is the Way. Right. And it's all about, instead of looking at these obstacles you face in your life as something that you need to run away from or try to get around or whatever, embrace it.
Right.
Use that obstacle as a source of power,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's when I realized, you know, the surrendering, you know, not being this place of weakness, but being a place of power, you know, and finding strength behind it. And that's when I realized this disease and the fact that I'm an alcoholic, instead of trying to hide it, instead of lying to people about why I'm not drinking, about, you know what? I'm going to own this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to own this thing and feel empowerment from it and use it to the best of my ability. And that was the moment. I didn't know what I was going to do when I got out of rehab, but I knew that I wasn't going to keep this a secret anymore. Yeah. Because even I had already said, I'm going to be honest with my family and my friends and stuff like that. Yeah. But beyond that, as we talked about the lying, right?
Yeah.
I was so freaking tired of lying.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm still going to be a liar.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. If we're going to dinner, yeah. why am I not having a glass of wine? Why, you know, if I'm at a football game with some guys, why am I not having a beer? Yeah. And I would be lying.
Yeah.
And I knew that would eventually filter its way back into the rest of my life. And I said, I'm not going to lie anymore. Yeah. So I'm going to be honest with everybody about this. And I'm not going to shy away from it.
And no, I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't drink today.
Yeah.
Or
no, yeah. I don't drink because I had a problem. This is what I told people. And they go, also drugs. Oh, all right. Oh, good for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just what? No. It's very nice wine. I said, no, but I cannot drink. No, it's just wine.
Yeah.
I was an addict.
Yeah.
Motherfucker. Yeah. I can't because I drink this one, that one, and that one.
And yours.
And, then go, and yours. And they go, okay. Oh, yeah. And then they got, they got interested. Oh, really? Yeah. You know? But it's very normal, and you know, in Holland and in the television, and we drink, and after that, we drink. And where are you going? We're going to drink a wine. No, I don't drink. Oh, I drink cola. Yeah, I had three, but now I'm full.
Yeah.
So it's also the what he also talk about the you can get it everywhere.
Oh yeah,
it's everywhere. You walk to the store. There is. You go to a funerary. This is it. You have to drink. A birthday party, Max Verstappen today, football, everywhere.
You can find an excuse to drink every single day.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they don't. And the problem is that people don't see alcohol as a drug.
No.
And
no.
It's for me, it's a drug.
No, it's just me too.
And I'm really happy for people who can take a drink or two. But I'm so happy that I see it as a drug, as a drug. Because before that, I would say, yeah, but I'm a cocaine addict.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a gambling addict. I don't have a problem with alcohol.
No.
But the moment I drink alcohol.
You want the cocaine.
I want the cocaine.
And the gamble.
And the gambling and the rest.
Everything.
Yeah, it's the gateway, man.
Yeah, it's the gateway. It's a stepping stone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
But the funny thing about that, too, though, is, and I, you know, you see this on social media and stuff, the quotes of, you know, alcohol is the only drug that you have to explain why you don't use it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
like
a nice one.
You don't
that's
have so, to say if you say to nice somebody, one. No, I don't do coke or no, I don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know? I understand.
You know?
Yeah.
But if you say I don't drink, why? Yeah. Come on, have
Come
a drink.
On. Yeah.
You
just once. Just once.
Is it your religion? No, because I was drinking and having my religion, but I don't drink. About your religion.
Yeah,
also, but you know, yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's
just take one. Just
take one. Yeah.
That one is my problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. And they don't get that.
They don't get that.
And I have plenty of people who still say to me,
yeah.
But like, are you really never going to drink again?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, God, I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't dare say that because I don't want to think that far down the road, but they don't get that.
No.
You know, and I understand that. They don't have a problem,
yeah.
You know, but. Yeah.
And it was my fault always when I started, you know, I was clean for 3-4 months. Then I said, just one.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just one. 3 days later, I'm going to drink again. And I said, it was 3 days later. I didn't drink those 3 days now. So I can do one. And every time it goes from one to one to lie. Then
classic.
I
say,
you only drink two. Yeah, I only drink two. Then I buy the bottle, hide him. I was hiding.
And
I get tired of that. Tired to lying, tired to get the dealer at home, tired to ask the dealer, don't bring bottles, but bring plastic, because otherwise he came in the night, he heard cling, tang, tong, ting. Because I was drunk and I said, don't bring me bottles. What do you mean? No bottles, bring me blikjes.
Yeah,
and then he came with bottles. He said, they only have that.
Yeah.
Then I don't say, all right, go. No, all right, give me that one. And then she hear it. Are you drinking again? No.
The most embarrassing day during the pandemic was recycling pickup.
Everybody would see.
My neighbors, because in the U.S., everything's big, right?
Yeah.
We have these big recycling barrels.
Yeah.
Well, mine would be filled with wine bottles and beer bottles and everything.
Yeah.
So recycling picks up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, you know. So my whole neighborhood would hear clang, 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 clang.
Oh, that's Dan. That's Dan.
I was ashamed when I get in the morning. So I get all night long, and in the morning at 8 o'clock, Albert Heijn's go open up, and the Gal and Gal was closed. So I have to go to the Albert Heijn. But to pick up some wine and put them there on the to the girl. I take my phone and said, I got the wine for tonight. Yes. No, sir. No, I have the wine for tonight. Yes. Just make a
a show there for the girl, because otherwise she will see I buy this wine in the morning.
You made lots of phone calls with no one.
Talk to you. Hi, Najib, can I have the pictures? I got a phone number. Yeah, it's okay. Or to Albert Heijn, you have this girls with a hoofddoek, with the Muslimas. Like, oh no, I don't go to her. I put my wine here. But I have a girlfriend, a friend there. She will always like me. She says, Najib, you come to me. So I go with this wine. I go, no, no, you come to me. I open up special for you. And then I put my wine there.
Maybe that's also an alcoholic.
Yeah, maybe, right? Yeah. But that's also like the ego too, though. That ego. We think they give a crap.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you're buying it. They're probably like, they don't give a
crap. Or that they don't know.
How many people come in the morning and do the same thing?
Or that they don't know.
Yeah.
That's a crazy one.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know.
I have to hide it because nobody knows. Yeah. You know, and you're just really like shit faced.
Did you sometimes had a problem when you are dancing with alcohol?
Or no, because that was the thing. By some miracle, I never really suffered from hangovers.
Okay.
Right. So like when I was in my 20s and I was dancing professionally, I was in crazy good shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd be in the studio all day rehearsing for a gig or something like that. Yeah. And then me and a couple buddies would go to the bar.
Yeah.
I would drink. I would black out. My alarm would go off in the morning. Boom. I was back in the studio and dancing again.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, the one, I guess, if you can call it smart, I don't know if smart's the right word. The one disciplined thing I did was I never drank at work.
Okay.
Right. I didn't drink before dance when I was dancing or when I was choreographing or even as a judge.
Yeah.
You know, on the television shows, I didn't drink during the shows. Thank God, because I had so many tells.
Yeah.
Also, I got a lazy eye and I got like all these different tells you would have been able to see if I was drinking. So. Yeah. That was one of the ways, the discipline of hiding it from everybody.
I got the same because I also planned it. I said, okay, tomorrow I have this show. I have the 2 o'clock. Okay, now I can get it till there.
Yeah.
And then I stop. I have this meeting. And then he said, we're going to have to, I have to go, you know, to do it again. I was planning it all. Mm-hmm. But my discipline, I had discipline, but then I start to make a show with a guy who I work with. And then I say, I don't feel it today. So, all right, call me when you feel it. And then I get drunk and get coke and I don't feel it. So I started doing a show. I had no inspiration. I get paranoia. I buy two hand pops, you know, and I think that's funny. So I put them there and there was some 200 people and I go, hello, hello. And they don't laugh and they are sweating. So this is not funny, man. It was funny when I had on coke. Hello, 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 no. And then I throw them away.
Hey,
all right, fuck this shit. I have another. And then I start losing my self-vertrauen. I'm losing it.
Yeah.
I told my brother, man, I can't. I have to stop. And he knows it, my brother.
Yeah.
My wife knows it. But the rest was thinking, oh, maybe you work too hard. And I said, no, I have a burnout.
Yeah.
So then I canceled the show of a year.
Wow.
And I would say, I cancel it. But I cancel it. The people had tickets. They say, why? And the guys who are from sound and light, they say, yo, we don't have a job anymore. Yeah. No? No.
You don't realize all the other people.
Yeah.
It affects lots of things.
Yeah. So it fucks up my whole show, my whole career. And then I was thinking, all right, what are you going to do? Gonna look for help, or, and that was the reason that I go for the second time to treatment. Yeah. I don't have a problem also when people are drinking. I don't have it. You know, people said, oh, you don't have to be, but people drink. When I am doing show, people drinking afterwards, say in the Jeep, they see my show. It goes about recovery, and I tell them the story. Beauty.
Yeah.
And then his wife said, no, man. He said, oh, I'm sorry. So I think it's all a joke.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you work hard for it.
Yeah.
You work hard for it.
And you also go to meetings.
Yeah. 12-step meetings.
12-step meetings.
Yeah. There's just, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Okay.
Yeah. I read a lot. I pray a lot.
Speaker tapes also?
Speaker tapes?
Yeah.
No.
I will show you.
Yeah?
I will show you.
What's okay.
Speaker tapes are people who are in recovery.
Yeah.
The most of them in America. That's what I like to listen to. Also okay. from Compton and things like that.
Okay.
People from Compton in recovery.
Yeah, yeah.
And they share their experience, strength, and hope on a speaker tape. Yeah.
Okay.
You know it.
No, I don't know.
It's really nice. Okay. It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaker tapes.
All right. I'll have to check that out.
Check. Yeah. And the speaker tapes are nice if you're traveling. And
yeah.
there are no meetings in the neighborhood.
Yep.
You can put on a speaker tape. It's like you're in a meeting.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
You have a sponsor?
I have a sponsor. Yeah. And I was going to say, like, the pod, I love, there's so many different ways
yeah.
to stay connected mm-hmm. now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, when I hear from like the old timers, mm-hmm. you know, that
yeah.
they had the meetings and nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're lucky. We have so many different yeah. things we yeah. can reach to. But there's still nothing like being in the room.
No.
Yeah.
I love, even if I have a crazy week where I'm traveling and different yeah. things and I don't have as much time, I make sure that I go to at least that one meeting
yeah.
where I can sit in the room, mm-hmm. talk to some people,
yeah.
you know, just, there's just something better about that. You yeah. feel more connected.
Mm-hmm.
But I go to as many meetings as I can. I have my sponsor, you know, and even doing the podcast and even yeah. just getting on the phone.
Yeah.
With somebody, I'll end up being yeah. on the phone for 45 yeah. minutes with them. It's yeah. like, it's like a therapy.
It's therapy.
Session,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, really. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. as much as yeah. it annoys my wife, because
yeah.
like she'll, yeah. I'll be talking to a total stranger yeah. on the yeah, phone yeah. for oh, 45 yeah. minutes, yeah. spilling my guts, yeah. you know? And then I'll walk into the kitchen. Yeah. She'll be like, so how's it going, babe? I'm
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
you know? She's like,
what about
that's
me?
It? You don't yeah. want to talk?
yeah. Yeah.
Like I have to get used to it in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. And I have to make sure that I'm not, I was such a selfish,
yeah.
you know, person as an addict. I have to make sure that I'm not so selfish in my recovery, yeah, you know, because yeah. it's easy for me to focus on what I need every day
yeah.
And not pay attention to what she needs. But, you know, she yeah. needs me to talk to her too. She wants to know what's going on in my head
yeah.
as much as I don't want her to always know what's going on in my head. She needs to know. She yeah. deserves to know. You know, so I have to make sure that I'm aware of that and stay connected yeah. there as well.
Yeah. You will get there, Dan, because you know you're 1.5 year clean.
Yeah.
And it's all about finding balance also in your recovery.
Yeah. Which I already am. I'm already realizing, even just in daily life and in with different friends and different family members and things like that. You know, I wouldn't say I avoided them for a long time, but I wasn't actively, you know, searching them out and things like that. And I find myself now kind of mixing into my life and my and society more than I was before.
Nice. And how is it for you to see your colleagues who are still using? Do you talk with them?
You know, I don't really.
Or are you just people, open? You're open for.
I'm open for conversation and a lot of people do want to talk, which is cool.
Oh, that's nice.
But at the same time, it's like if somebody tried to talk to me when I was using, I would have laughed them off.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't push myself on anybody.
No,
if they come to me, great.
You're
you know,
open
but
and
yeah,
to
I'm
help
open
them
and
show
and
them
I,
what you're doing.
And I let everybody know, you know, I'm always open to talking.
Yeah.
But
you're right about that.
But that's it though, right? Talking. Like conversation is what has changed my life.
Yeah.
Just conversations with people.
Yeah.
You know, and so whether they're an addict or they have something else going on in their life, like we all always say, right? Everyone's got something going on. So you just letting them know that you're always there just to have a chat just about whatever is going on.
Yeah.
I realize has made a difference and I have much better, more important conversations with people than I ever did before.
A little bit deeper.
Yeah. A lot bit deeper.
Yeah.
So, Radar.
Yeah, man.
It was a nice,
that was really
nice
interesting.
Chat,
Your English is
Oh,
good.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right.
I
learned English from the television.
Motherfucker.
We're talking to me. Get out of here.
You're watching mobster television.
We have to do this more often.
Why not?
Really. We have to do this more often.
No. And so you have been on the television with the shows now, also in Belgium.
Yep.
You have more in the future?
I don't know if I'm going to keep doing Belgium or not, but definitely going to keep working here.
Yeah.
I love it here. I love traveling here, and I'm actually enjoying it for a lot more than I was in previous years.
Yeah.
You know, I've already, just in the 6 months that I've been here since things have opened up again and, you know, working on television again here, I've experienced more of Amsterdam in those 6 months than I did in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, I isolated in every way imaginable, you know? So my friends have become real friends now.
Yeah.
And experiencing the city, and I'm just getting so much more out of it. And even just like when we just filmed Holland's Got Talent.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a job for the first time in a long time. I actually genuinely enjoyed being there and had fun. You know, so it's like a new experience, which is really cool.
Yeah. Nice. Well, it was an honor to have you here and that you speak to us and to all our listeners and viewers. And that's what we do in the show. You know, we talk and we try to get them information, inspiration and motivation. And we hope you... We're going to see you again.
Absolutely.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thank you.
I enjoyed
very
the
much.
Chat.
Thank
you
I
very
really, much, really like
thanks.
It.
Ja, dames en heren, dit was het dan. En volg ons, like ons. En ontzettend bedankt voor het luisteren en voor het kijken. En Dan en natuurlijk Reda, ontzettend bedankt.
Ja, jullie dankjewel. Ook bedankt. Dankjewel.